Hey there, Smashville. What's going on? How are you? We are great. Thanks for asking. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick, Braden, and Chase. Derek is on assignment today tracking LeBron James, keeping track of flights, whether or not kids are getting enrolled in schools in Houston, Los Angeles, Boston, Philly. So if anything breaks, Derek Mason will check in on our global hotline. Good to have you in. But Braden, this is now the time of the year where you start to inch closer to college football. And preseason rankings come out, Heisman hopefuls, we rank coaches.
Athlon Sports magazines are out.
Correct.
Athlonsports.com/store.
Which I was reading all three. You know, I was actually so bored yesterday, because I have no life, that I was looking at all three Athlon college football magazines you gave me, the regional cover of Tennessee, the regional cover of Alabama, and then the national cover. And I was just trying to see which parts are like duplicates and if there's different stuff in each one. And I was just very fascinated by the whole process. I just wanted to let that be known.
I can go, like, the best way to purchase Athlon magazines is to buy a national one and to buy a one of your favorite conference. So if you're an Ohio State fan, buy a Big Ten magazine and buy a national magazine.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of fresh content in both the magazines. They're very, very different because we cover all 130 teams in one book and we cover really, really in-depth in the SEC magazine, the SEC. So we try really hard to make sure there's multiple sides, and there's a reason to get both of them, because if you care about college football enough to buy an SEC magazine, you probably care enough to know how good's Penn State going to be and how good's USC going to be and how good's Oklahoma going to be. Because what's really awesome about college football right now, and some people may say it's a negative, I would say it's a positive, that what happens in an Oregon-Washington game could influence whether or not Alabama gets into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And they're never going to play each other. And that's what makes the sport so fun and so cool, is that on any given Saturday, any game could change. Like, Iowa State beat Oklahoma last year. Like, Iowa beat, like, the state of Iowa. Iowa beat Ohio State, what was it, like 57-21 or something
crushed
like that. And that's the reason Alabama got in.
Yep.
An Iowa-Ohio State game is the reason Alabama got into the playoffs. So that's what's fun about college football, is that you could be watching your team in your conference and then realize that some game in some other league that you've never really paid attention to all of a sudden is going to change the way your team's chances are of winning or competing for a national championship. It's a lot of fun in that way, for me at least.
So, yeah, and I agree with you. I'm all about it. So let's look at the conference, the SEC, the coaching rankings, and really we're going to break it down into two segments. We're going to go from the bottom of the pack to the middle of the pack, and obviously that'll be where Jeremy Pruitt slots in accordingly. And then, of course, you've got the upper echelon coaches and whether or not there's a guy that can actually replace Nick Saban one day as the top dog.
Yeah, I want to start at the top because it's super easy. Nick Saban's number one. I don't really think that's overly controversial. But number two is a really hard decision. And so I sort of have a tier of coaches behind Nick Saban in the SEC. I've got four guys that are on a tier all by themselves beneath Nick Saban and above everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of those four coaches are Dan Mullen, Gus Malzahn, Kirby Smart, and Jimbo Fisher. Those four guys are above everybody else in the SEC, but clearly below Nick Saban. I do not understand Gus Malzahn's relationship with the Auburn fan base. Auburn fans, because they are the little brothers of that state, and even though they're really, really, really good, that's a great program with great history and national championships and all this stuff, there still is like this inferiority complex. And it's like, who else could beat Nick Saban in his division twice in 5 years? I don't think people realize that Auburn has won the division twice in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
In the same division as Nick Saban. Who else can say that they could possibly do that? There's very few coaches on the planet that could say, I'm going to go head-to-head with Nick Saban and win the division 2 out of 5 times. They won it in 2013. Obviously, the kick six was a crazy play, and they won it last year. Auburn, by the way, folks, is the defending SEC West champion.
Yeah.
So I think Gus is really good and not valued properly by his fans. I think Dan Mullen is an exceptional football coach, and he'll tell you about it. I think the 9-year run at Mississippi State is so underappreciated, how tough it is to win at Mississippi State.
Hard to believe he was there 9 years.
And went to a bowl game basically every year. Here's a stat that I love for Dan Mullen. No coach had ever been to 4 straight bowl games in the history of Mississippi State football, and I think Mullen went to 8.
So he doubled it.
So, he is the greatest coach in Mississippi State history, and it's not even close. He had Mississippi State, folks, Mississippi State, as the number one team in the nation.
With what, Dak in 14?
Number one team in the nation,
yep,
at one point. So I think now we're going to find out what Dan Mullen can do with the keys to a Rolls Royce, not the keys to like a Toyota Tacoma, which is what I drive. So I'm not insulting Mississippi State. But you look at what he's got now with Florida, and he's got the super, he's got the Lambo, right? Like now he's got the car with all the facilities and all the talent. It's got the huge engine. It is a super sports car, the University of Florida, and we'll find out what he can do with that program. So I have Dan Mullen at number two. I have Gus Malzahn at number three. I have Kirby Smart at number four. I still need to, like, he's got the potential to take over for Nick Saban, but he's only done it 1 year.
Have Jimbo Fisher in your top four.
I have Jimbo Fisher at five. I think you can make the case for any of these. I think all four of these guys are the same, basically. It's what you value. I think you could argue that Jimbo Fisher underachieved at Florida State.
Hmm.
And he won a national championship.
Underachieved.
So I think 6-5 last year, completely fell apart on defense the year before where they got just torched by Lamar Jackson. North Carolina beat him on the last second field. Like,
so you think if you eliminate
Houston, they won a national championship because they had a transcendent player.
I was just
going to
say, if you take Jameis Winston away from Jimbo Fisher, you think he's significantly lesser of a coach?
Here's the thing. I'm not making a definitive statement one way or the other on Jimbo Fisher. But we will know about Jimbo Fisher because either A&M will compete right away and be routinely competing with Alabama and Auburn for the championships in that division, or he will go 8-5 every year and he will be Kevin Sumlin. They just fired a guy for going 8-5
right.
every year at Texas A&M.
But now we also know that the state of Texas and the state of Florida are recruiting hotbeds. Do you think it's more difficult or easier for Jimbo in College Station as opposed to Tallahassee, or is it about the same?
To recruit?
Yeah. Because of all the schools in those respective states.
Probably about the same, but I think Tallahassee is – Florida State is one of those – like top four or five or six elite level jobs that you can recruit to.
Mm.
I think you can recruit at a very high level to A&M. There's just no question. Kevin Sumlin did it. But if you had to pick, I would lean Tallahassee. I mean, Florida State, you could argue, is the premier program in the state of Florida. You cannot argue that with A&M. Texas is the premier program in the state of Texas. Everyone who grows up in the state of Texas, I lived in Austin for 3 years, in Texas for six. There is no way about getting around the fact that UT, Texas, is the premier program in that state. Kids grow up wanting to go to Texas. They don't grow up wanting to go to A&M.
Okay.
So it's like Alabama and Auburn. I mean, it's probably more split in Alabama and Auburn, but Michigan, Michigan State. You grow up in the state of Michigan wanting to go play for the Maize and Blue.
Sure.
Sparty is like, okay, great. I'll go there because I got a scholarship. Sorry, D-Mace, you're not here to defend your
program. That's your option. Yeah.
It just is what it is, and it doesn't mean you can't win. Auburn has shown that you can win at a very high level. A&M has never shown that, ever. A&M's greatest three-year run of college football is like three trips to the Cotton Bowl in like the early 90s. Like, that's the best they've ever done.
So your top five would be who? Obviously, Saban at one. Give me two through five.
I would go Mullen two, Malzahn three, Kirby four, Jimbo five. But I don't think there's a big difference between Mullen, Gus, Kirby, and Jimbo.
I agree.
I don't think there's a difference there. I mean, Gus Malzahn's been to a national championship game and lost and has beaten Nick Saban twice in the division in 5 years. Kirby Smart has won an SEC championship and been to the national championship game. I think what Dan Mullen did at Mississippi State is impossibly difficult, and Jimbo Fisher, of course, has a national championship ring. I just think if you look at the last five years at Florida State since they won the title in 2013, he's sort of like, I know there's been some injuries, and he's been, why is he fighting with his administration? Why does he leave a premier job like Florida State? Why did they drop off so badly last year? There's just so many questions, I think, that if he's as great as his championship indicated, he'll be very good at A&M, and we'll find out very quickly that he's great. Otherwise, they'll just be 8-5, and he'll be Kevin Sumlin.
I would qualify this way to give my top five. I would say right now, at this moment, moving forward, who would I have moving forward? Obviously, Saban at one. I'd go Kirby Smart two. Then I'd go Malzahn three, Mullen four, Jimbo Fisher five.
I think one of the biggest arguments for Kirby Smart is his growth process from year one to year two. Tremendous amount of growth in the program. Lost games he should not have lost in year one. The way they played against Vanderbilt was just like, they made plays in his first season that you're just like, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And he corrected those mistakes, and they got significantly better in year two. Also, how he made adjustments from game one against Auburn to game two against Auburn.
Yeah.
They got completely demoralized on the plains in the regular season. And then you could tell the adjustments and the attitude and the difference in game plan in game two in the SEC championship game, where they dominated the line of scrimmage and completely flipped the style of game on its head and won the SEC championship because of it. And frankly, probably should have won the national title game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you on all these guys. It's really hard but after those guys, the rest of the SEC, it is a complete crapshoot because those five guys are qualified to be at the top. Everybody else, we have no idea about.
Where does Jeremy Pruitt slot in with that crapshoot? We'll find out coming up next, as well as an update on both of our poll questions of the day. The 8 o'clock hour of Morning Drive is brought to you by French Lick Resort. It's your home for legendary golf in southern Indiana. French Lick Resort has courses by Hall of Fame designers Pete Dye and Donald Ross. Just go online to FrenchLick.com and book your trip today. More college football coaching talk in the SEC when we come back on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Back in Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is great to have you in. Nick Hale, Braden Gault, Chase McCabe with you on this Thursday. Coming up in just about 15 minutes, we will talk some NFL with Sean Salisbury, former NFL quarterback, Houston talk show host. We'll get his take on all things Tennessee Titans related. But continuing on a little college football discussion, as we are now at that time of the year, Athlon Sports ranking their SEC coaches. We did the top half. We at least did 1 through 5, and then you go from 6 all the way down. Now, as you said, Braden, it becomes a crapshoot.
Yeah, it's really hard. Who's the 6th best coach in the SEC? I don't think we could argue Mullen, Gus, Kirby, Jimbo, and debate about where those guys all belong against each other.
Yep.
But no one should have any of those guys below number 5, because who are you going to make the case for? Mark Stoops?
No.
No. Will Muschamp?
Is Muschamp definitively the number 6 guy, though?
I have Muschamp at number 6. He 11 wins for Florida. I think he would have, had he been given more time at Florida, I think would have been better than Jim McElwain. Clearly got South Carolina moving in the right direction. I'm not buying the hype for South Carolina this year, but I think he's a solid football coach. And right now, solid football coach is more than you can say for a lot of the other teams in the SEC, because they're either brand new, Chad Morris, Joe Moorhead, Jeremy Pruitt, former interims, Matt Luke, about to get fired, Coach O, or Barry Odom. So, solid football coach is right now better than the rest of the SEC. So, I think Will Muschamp at 6, Mark Stoops at 7. I have Chad Morris at 8. He has history of being a head coach. He's been good at SMU. He recruited and developed Deshaun Watson at Clemson as an offensive coordinator and built that program up with Dabo Swinney. So, I have Chad Morris at number 8. Joe Moorhead walks into the easiest situation. He walks into a team at Mississippi State that is ready to win today.
The question will be, can he maintain and keep
right.
that?
So he's going to look really good in year one. When we're done evaluating these guys in year one, Joe Moorhead is going to look really good. He was very, very good at Fordham. Yes, I acknowledge that's Fordham. I get it.
Does Fordham get you ahead of Pruitt?
He was great at Fordham, but he also turned Penn State into a juggernaut on offense. He stepped into Penn State on offense and was a juggernaut. And for a guy that never has been in the South and has never been an SEC guy, for Mississippi State fans to just be all in on this guy so fast, so quickly, I think is a sign that they believe in the hire. So we don't know about Joe Moorhead. Can he handle the bright lights of the SEC? We don't know. All we have to go on is a really good head coach at Fordham, really exceptional offensive coordinator at Penn State, won a Big Ten title and totally transformed that offense.
But with a generational talent in Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Trace McSorley's a good quarterback.
Great talent, but he's sort of same James Franklin season. James Franklin was about to be fired midway through that year, and it was Joe Moorhead's offense that saved James Franklin's job. But again, there are a lot, like, look at how fan bases are reacting to these hires, right? I think the Tennessee fan base is largely unified, but mostly because of Fulmer, not because of Pruitt. I think everybody is like 50-50 on Pruitt. We're not really sure. Almost everybody in Starkville is totally bought in on Joe Moorhead. So that may be a function of just, hey, we have a really good team coming back this year, and we think we're going to be good in Starkville. I have Barry Odom at number 10. I have Derek Mason at number 11. I don't think he's a great coach. I don't think he's a bad coach. I think Derek Mason's just sort of is a good fit at Vanderbilt, and if he consistently has them fighting for bowl games every year, that's what they should do.
Mm-hmm.
I have Coach O at number 12. I think you can make the case Coach O belongs at number 14, but there's an offensive line coach turned interim coach turned like part-time head football coach, Matt Luke, who I think is actually did a pretty good job last year at
Ole
Miss.
So you could make the case. Now you have him.
I have Jeremy Pruitt at 13.
So you have Ed Orgeron ahead of Pruitt, but you can make the case that he should be behind him.
I think you can make the case Coach O is last, unfortunately. Here's the thing about Pruitt and Moorhead and Morris, the three new guys. They're new. We don't know. We're guessing. But there's more head coaching experience by far with Chad Morris and Joe Moorhead than there is with Jeremy Pruitt. There is zero head coaching experience at any level ever at any point in his life.
But is what Pruitt's background, you know, when you look at his resume and who he's worked with from a football mind standpoint, is that enough to supplant a guy that only coached, and I say that loosely, at Fordham?
Well, but again, if you're going to say that Pruitt gets credit for coaching with Jimbo Fisher and Mark Richt and Nick Saban, then you've got to give Joe Moorhead credit for being James Franklin's right-hand man.
Yeah.
And you've got to give Chad Morris credit for being Dabo Swinney's right-hand man. So if you're going to give credit for being a coordinator, then all three of these guys have that on their resume. They all were coordinators at big-time, high-profile jobs.
But is anybody going to put
at a very high level?
And I like James Franklin. I like him a lot. But is anybody putting Franklin in the same paragraph as Rick, Saban, and Jimbo?
I would take James Franklin over Mark Richt as a head coach. Absolutely.
Really?
I think James Franklin's a top 10 coach in the country. I mean, he
I don't disagree with that. I don't know if I would put him ahead of Rick, though. Are you saying he's done more with less?
What's Rick ever won? I mean, Rick, I mean, listen, when you win 18 games at Vanderbilt, you've accomplished something.
Sure.
He quickly turned Penn State around after one of the worst scandals in history. I know Bill O'Brien gets some credit for that. But I think, again, if we're saying, all I'm saying is if you're going to give Jeremy Pruitt credit for working for good coaches, then you have to also give Chad Morris and Joe Moorhead credit for working for good coaches, because they all have worked for high-level head coaches in college football. Is Nick Saban better than James Franklin? Yes, of course, but we're splitting hairs at that point. We're talking about resume, right?
Right.
And Joe Moorhead and Chad Morris have head coaching experience. They have run a program as a CEO. Jeremy Pruitt doesn't even look comfortable off of a practice field. Like, you put that guy in regular street clothes, and he doesn't look like a normal human being. He looks uncomfortable. It doesn't mean he's not a great coach.
His khakis don't fit well?
And his pants never fit. I don't understand. But that has nothing to do with how good of a coach he could be, obviously. So,
yeah, I don't think Jim Harbaugh – I mean, and you and I disagree on what Harbaugh really is, but I don't think Jim Harbaugh looks very comfortable in society either. He's a strange bird.
No, he doesn't, and that's what makes –
And he can coach.
That's what makes him a great coach. You're right. I think the point here of this discussion is that if Will Muschamp is the sixth best coach in the league, there is a lot of room to move up if you're Jeremy Pruitt. If you're Jeremy Pruitt and you go win seven games this year, you will go from one of the worst perceived coaches in the SEC to maybe sixth or seventh. That's the, like, after the top five in the SEC, there's a whole lot of we don't know. And we sort of just, like, Will Muschamp and Mark Stoops sort of just feel like guys, right? They don't feel like elite-level coaches, but they're not bad coaches. Derek Mason, not an elite coach, not a bad coach, just sort of is a guy. And if Jeremy Pruitt is great, he will move up very quickly and be one of the top six or seven coaches in the league. Is that going to happen in year one? I don't think anyone thinks that's going to happen. But if he wins seven games, he will automatically move ahead of Barry Odom, Derek Mason, Ed Orgeron, Matt Luke. He'll move up to five or six spots in the rankings by just getting to a bowl game this year.
As I turn my microphone back on, would you put Pruitt, now obviously this will be at the end of the season, if Pruitt beats South Carolina on the road, are you putting Pruitt ahead of Will Muschamp? Or does it matter on entire season body of work?
Yeah, it's the whole season's body of work, because you don't, I don't know how you feel about James Franklin, but James Franklin and Jim Harbaugh is a nice comparison here, because everybody hates Jim Harbaugh, but it's mostly because of his polarizing, like, antics off the field, not because his teams, nobody really actually analyzes how good his teams are, which they are very good. And Harbaugh beat James Franklin by 40 points two years ago.
Yep.
James Franklin won the Big Ten title that year. So how do you evaluate that, right? Like, it's not about head-to-head. One team won the Big Ten title, and one team got smoked head-to-head. So if Will Muschamp wins nine games this year at South Carolina but loses to Jeremy Pruitt, I think Will Muschamp's going to get a lot of credit for being a pretty good coach. So it's more, I think it is about the big picture body of work. Now, after 6 years, if Jeremy Pruitt's 6-0 against South Carolina, sort of like the way South Carolina, Butch Jones just couldn't beat South Carolina, you know, I think then we start to have the conversation about, hey, that guy's just got that guy's number. So I think that's going to be interesting. I just don't think Tennessee's in a situation to really learn anything this particular season. That's the good news for Tennessee fans. The only thing they can really learn this year about Jeremy Pruitt is if he wins some games he's not supposed to. He doesn't really get knocked for losing a bunch of games that he's going to be a touchdown underdog in.
No.
If he's a 7-point underdog to South Carolina and a 7-point underdog to West Virginia and a 7-point underdog to Missouri and and he loses those games by seven or within reason, I don't think he's going to get ripped too hard by anybody. So he sort of has house money this year to, if he wins a couple of games he's not supposed to, he'll move up this list and we'll have more respect and Philip Fulmer will feel more vindicated.
All right, coming up next, we'll get back to the Titans as Sean Salisbury is going to join us, former NFL quarterback and Houston talk show host. We'll get his thoughts on Marcus Mariota and all things Titans.
Just one more point to wrap this up.
Yeah.
In our national rankings, all 130 coaches, we did this at athlonsports.com, and we just did a podcast about it. You can go check it all out. Out of 1 to 130, where do you think James Franklin was, and where do you think Jeremy Pruitt was?
1 to 130, I'm going to say Franklin was, let's say, 12th?
About right. He was 9th, I think, 8th or 9th.
Okay.
And Jeremy Pruitt was...
I'm going to guess 58.
94th.
Wow.
94th. There are a lot of good football coaches in America right now.
All right.
And none of them wanted to come to Tennessee.
Sean Salisbury is going to join us coming up next. But hey, guys, it's Nick Kale. I need to tell you about my friends at Hermitage Golf Course. They are the number one daily fee course in the state of Tennessee. And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back in the Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The Game, Nick Kale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe with you. Great to have you in on this Thursday. Let's get to some Titans discussion, some Marcus Mariota talk as we welcome in a former NFL quarterback. You've seen him for many years on ESPN, most recently with SB Nation, and now he's got a new slot as he's joining Afternoon Drive in Houston on 790, the great Sean Salisbury. Sean, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the introduction. It's good to be on with you guys.
Great to have you in. Wanted to get your thoughts. We've been talking a lot about Marcus Mariota. We had Jamie Dukes on yesterday, and he made a comment that he doesn't know if Marcus is anything more than Alex Smith right now. I'm curious to know where you slot in Marcus Mariota amongst NFL quarterbacks.
Now, and then I like Big Jamie too. Is there anything wrong with that? I mean, in truth, if I were to tell you he was going to have an Alex Smith career, now that doesn't mean you're not going to win a Super Bowl unless you said he's going to have the same record. Because in my opinion, Alex Smith's the most underrated football player in the NFL. Wow. I think he's the most underrated quarterback for the last 5 years, and I'm not even sure it's close.
Hmm.
The question is deep ball ability, and what did he do? Best deep ball thrower in the NFL last year, Alex Smith. I mean, while everybody questionable, is he capable? Can he get it done? He's more than a manager. Back when he got hurt those years ago with Colin Kaepernick, the guy was leading the league in passing when he got hurt, and then they shipped him off. So, and he had a bunch of different coordinators. So I don't think that's such a bad comparison. I think Alex Smith could win, and he's proven it. One of our underrated players. And in my list, there's not two that are more underrated than him. That being said, I think when we look at it, we're thinking, oh, Alex Smith, that means that Marcus isn't going to win a Super Bowl. I think he can. And I would say that Marcus Mariota, and that's a pretty good comparison. And right now, that's about what it is, because there's another level. And the difference is, can he stay on the field and be healthy for 60? And I'm a Mariota fan. I think he is a special skill set. There are some mechanical issues that I would have liked to see fixed, and I know widening his base and doing those things when you watch him play, and it will help him. It'll help him get the ball out. It'll help him anchor that back foot. And I know spending time in the offseason with the receivers, Tom House, and all those things that Marcus has done this offseason, which I love when a quarterback decides, what's the next level of my game? The next level, I do this good, I want to do it great. The key for a good quarterback is not continue. I mean, you know what his strengths are. Great quarterbacks recognize their weakness and they work on it. It's like if you're a great driver of the golf ball, what do most amateurs do? They'll go hit four or five other shots, and then they'll grab the big dog, the driver, and hit it on the range, and you're like, well, you already hit that. Go spend 8 hours in the bunker, because during a golf round as an amateur, you can't get out of the bunker. Go putt for 5 hours. Just like a quarterback. Well, we need to widen your base. We need to get the ball out quicker. We need to adjust your front shoulder. Well, go work on it. We'll work on the things we know you do, and Marcus has. You know, by doing that, the timing, I think it's important. So for me, I just want to see two or three full seasons where he's healthy and he's in rhythm, same coordinator. And Matt LaFleur, and I'm telling you, Pat O'Hara will help. LaFleur's done a great job with people in the past, and Pat O'Hara's been in the business a long time. So I think it's the most undercoached position in the NFL. It is. We expect you to just give us results when you get there. But if there's an attention to detail and the mechanics, think about the guys who mechanics don't break down under pressure and who are healthy. Brady, Breeze, Rodgers most of the time. They're consistent because the mechanics are good under pressure. And if Marcus gets to that point, I think he's got a chance to be better than Alex Smith. I think the potential's there. But let's not forget, Alex Smith was the first pick of the draft, so he's a pretty good player.
Sean, you've been around the Texans, obviously, being down there in Houston for a little while now. So Mike Vrabel comes here after linebacking coach and then becomes the DC for 1 year, obviously dealt with a lot of injuries. A, what makes Mike Vrabel the right guy to take Tennessee to the next tier? Obviously, Mike Mularkey got them to a certain level. So first question is, what about Mike Vrabel makes him the guy to do this? And kind of how would you describe Mike Vrabel the coach from a philosophical standpoint?
Well, and I also think, and let me backtrack for a second, I think this division is going to be really good, especially if the quarterback play is healthy. Luck, healthy. Mariota, healthy. Mariota, healthy, should I say. We say his name different, I guess, tomato, tomato. And Deshaun Watson, healthy. If that's the case, then we got a great division here. I think that number one is head coaches, the guys that know how to interview well, and Mike did, and he's got a background with John Robinson, that matters. But Mike's been around winners. Mike was a winner as a player. Mike understands, regardless if you take what Bill Belichick or Romeo Crennel brought you and taught you for all the years you played or played for them and then coached with them, Romeo here in Houston, there may be some things you don't like, but success breeds success. And Mike understood that. Mike knows how to take, and he's young enough to deal with, new players, and it's a different age of player than when he broke in. But he's also got enough old school moxie in him to make sure the discipline stays the same. See, the greatest head coaches hire great assistants. Because the truth of the matter is there's so many things that go on for a head coach. Hands-on's great, but you better hire good assistants because you're only as good as, number one, the talent you put on the field, and two, the guys that are around them every second, coaching them every day. Mike Vrabel's not going to have that big an impact daily on Marcus Mariota. They'll talk and make sure they're doing right things. It's LaFleur and Pat O'Hara that are going to make that difference. So good coaches understand how to delegate. Mike does. And we've never seen him as a head coach, so we don't know. I don't know if Mike's going to be a Hall of Fame head coach or he's going to be out in Florida. My gut tells me this was the right hire, and I believe it was because I've watched him in his playing career and here in Houston the last few years, and he held in such high regard. And if you remember, I think it was the 49ers. They were really interested in him last time around, and that's why the Texans elevated Mike's job and made him the defensive coordinator and let Romeo be the assistant head coach. They don't want to lose Mike, and I don't blame them. So he is held in high regard here in Houston, and you guys will hold him in high regard there. I just think his philosophy is he'll bring philosophy from Romeo and Bill Belichick both, but Mike will add a little bit of his own flavor, and the guy gets it. But the key is he's hired a hell of a staff. And when you hire good coaches around you, you oversee them and let them coach. And I think Mike Vrabel understands that part of it. I think the Tennessee Titans got themselves a damn good one.
Sean Salisbury is with us here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sean, as a former quarterback, you want to have guys that can protect you on the offensive line, and you want to have guys on the perimeter that can make plays. If you're Marcus Mariota, twofold. One, how do you sit back and view this Taylor Lewan contract situation as your stud franchise left tackle, protecting your blind side? And then secondly, when you look at the talent around you on the perimeter, do you have an issue with how this Titans roster is put together from a playmaker standpoint?
I think that we all have one question in mind, at least I know I do, is on that perimeter, and I'm not including the running back in this. I'm including the guys or Walker at tight end. But Davis has got to step his game. They got to get more production at the wideout position. They just do. Now, whether that's Marcus throwing it on time, whether that's great play action, whether that's throwing it more, getting them involved early, they've got to do that while making sure that the big fella in the backfield and their run game and play action game continue to extend and get the most out of it. So I don't think they're far off. I think they've improved their defense not only in draft but in free agency. And offensive line, when everybody's there, they'll run you down now. They're physical. And show me a finesse offensive line that wins championships, and I'll show you somebody maybe back in the seventh grade. But we don't do that in the NFL. You're physical, you have a chance to win. They do have that. So I think going into this season, if you were going to say, okay, is there a weakness or a little bit of a concern or a big concern for some? And I think it's the ability to make sure the separation wideout production. And Davis now will have to elevate to another level because you've got to use the whole field in the NFL. You just can't play with a great tight end or hand the ball off to a 240-pound running back and expect to win. You've got to be able to stretch the field in this NFL we play in now. As far as Taylor's contract, listen, if I'm a quarterback or if you're a player on the team, you stay out of other people's business. I never got into the business when I was a player or didn't like when players got into the business of talking about their own teammates' contract. It's none of your damn business. It just isn't. As a quarterback, you want him there. If you don't tell him when to get in and what time, how much he should take and what he should settle for, that's not your business. You encourage, you want him there, you hope he's there, you love him at many camps even when he's not there. Those things, yes. But when he's dead, I don't like people publicly talking about, well, he should take the money and get in at the time. That's none of your damn business. That's their business. As a person and as a teammate, then you put your arm around him. Now, that being said, do I like all my players under contract there? Of course I do. Of course I do. It'll get done. He's going to get paid. John Robinson's a hell of a front office guy, and they'll be lining up with their whole offensive line. In truth, we make a big deal over this. Do we really need at minicamp, honestly, do we really need for 2 or 3 days a guy like that, Taylor Lewan, running plays and risk? Do we, when we really get down to it, if he was a rookie, a second year, didn't get it, he's coming off a blown out knee, all those things, I get it. But I'm not real concerned. Now, 3 weeks into training camp, if the guy decided not to show up, then I'm concerned. I'm not overly concerned in June that he's not going to be there in July and August. And if it continues, then I got a problem. But my team's not going to suffer if my guy, who I know can play, decided to miss a couple days of minicamp. I want him there, yes. But let's not make a mountain out of a molehill. We're still a couple months away from worrying about that. He'll have his hand in the dirt ready to play this fall.
Sean Salisbury always telling it like it is. You can follow him on Twitter at Sean Unfiltered. And coming up in July, taking over the afternoon spot in Houston. We appreciate the time. Thank you very much, Sean.
You guys are great. Good luck. It should be a fun season. Appreciate you having me on.
We'll talk to you soon. Sean. There he is, Sean Salisbury, joining us here on Morning Drive. How about that? Pretty adamant about the whole Lewan contract situation.
Yeah, effusive praise from Mike Vrabel as well. So, I listen. This isn't a story, this Lewan stuff. I agree that missing the last day, like you said it, if you're going to cancel practice, it can't be that important, right?
Yep.
The Titans canceled an entire practice. It cannot be that big of a deal that Lewan wasn't out there. Now, you start missing training camp, you start missing preseason games, you miss a regular season game, now we got a problem.
Coming up next, we stick to sports on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Black hole sun, won't you come?
8:46, welcome back in, Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Nick Braden and Chase, good to have you in. Top of the hour, we'll get back to some of our Preds conversation. If you missed it to start the show, a lot from Vegas with the awards, PK, Pekka, schedule coming out. A lot of stuff on the Nashville Predators front.
God, what a great song.
You like that?
What do you mean, do I like that? I've never met a human being that doesn't like Black Hole Sun.
Yeah.
Chris Cornell, man.
I will say, I saw Chris Cornell solo at Hangout Fest. Very disappointing.
Why?
He played like, he was by himself, and he played like 11 guitars, and it was all acoustic. I was like, this isn't Soundgarden. I was like, come on, man. Very disappointing. But Soundgarden, amazing.
All right, before we wrap up the hour, we'll get an update on both of our poll questions. But right now, Chase McCabe, every day at 8:45 or there a boot. We stick to sports.
Let's see how smart the guys really are. No funny business. Stick to sports. Now, on Morning Drive.
And it's brought to you by Decorating Den Interiors. You can stick with the pros of Decorating Den when you're ready to decorate your home, office, or outdoor spaces. Request a complimentary appointment online today. DecoratingDen.com.
Let's see if we can get all five in today.
Well, we've only got two of us as opposed to three today, so...
I know, but one of you's Braden, so you never know. All right, number one.
How shots fired.
How should Pekka?
You gonna take that from a guy who's got gel in his hair?
Telling me that I talk a lot isn't exactly an original thought, Chase. So
I know
how to handle it pretty well.
How should Pekka Rinne celebrate his Vezina Trophy win when he returns to Finland? What would you do?
I'm going to go down the road of Alex Ovechkin celebrating. And was Ovechkin just drinking beer? I think, yes. Ovechkin was just a beer guy. I believe Finland is known for having some quality vodka. So I would just get some top shelf vodka.
Finlandia?
And enjoy.
Not very good.
The Vezina.
I would also go to a bar and place the trophy on the bar.
Can you do a keg stand out of the Vezina?
No, I would just put the trophy on the bar and just sit there and have
let people buy you drinks.
And have all of my Finnish countrymen and women buy me drinks.
Hey, think about it. We only have two of us today. Maybe we're going to finish this segment.
Number two.
That's where you hit the rim shot, but okay.
Oh,
I get it. It was bad.
Goodness.
I take
Listen, I will respect Nick Cale's effort and consistency on continuing to throw out.
Well, I have
bad,
no conscience.
Bad
so,
one-liners.
You know.
You have no shame. That's
I don't.
Sure.
That's a good quality.
I respect that about you.
NBA draft is tonight. You can hear it right here on ESPN 102.5. The game starting at 6 o'clock. The NBA draft, is that something that you sit down like you would the NFL draft and watch the whole thing, or
no.
are you checking
no.
in, watch the first few picks?
It's. I have the same opinion on the NBA draft that I think you guys had until I got you geared up for the NFL draft. To me, it's watch the first 5 to 7 picks, and then after that, I'll see it scroll on the bottom line. I'll check social media. But, I mean, after the top 10, does it really matter? Traditionally, more often than not.
No, because a lot of those guys you won't see for a while.
I think if you just show me the list at the end of the – because, like, the NBA used to be, like, 4,000 trades. So it used to be, like, where you'd watch – you'd come back and you'd look at the list of the NBA drafts, and you'd go – well, I don't know where did Kobe actually go? Like, I'm not sure. And you'd see drafted by this guy and then later traded for these two picks, and it was such a mess to track, like, in real time, that I just stopped watching. And that was right around when I just stopped watching. I want to know where DeAndre Ayton goes. I want to know where Marvin Bagley goes. I want to know where Trae Young goes. There's a handful of other guys I care about because I love them as college players. But basically, I'm okay looking at a list. If you show me a list, the landscape of the NBA is not going to be altered tonight. Unless Cleveland somehow lands some superstar, because didn't Kobe and Curry fall in the draft? Like, Kobe went, like, what, 8 or 9 or something like that, 10?
To the Hornets?
Curry went, like, where did he go in the draft? Like, 12 or 13 or something? There have been great players that have fallen just a few spots, and if Trae Young is that guy or if somebody else is that guy and Cleveland happens to get that guy, then maybe that influences the landscape and keeps LeBron in Cleveland. I don't know. I'm reaching.
What if they trade his rights? What if they say, we know he's not coming back, and they trade his rights?
That would be huge news, and that would be – I'd be jumping on Twitter immediately because I'm sure the internet would explode. And Derek Mason's head.
Stick to sports. Number three.
NFL.com, Gil Brandt had an article basically predicting first-time Pro Bowlers for every NFL team. And the one he had for the Tennessee Titans, before I tell you, care to take a guess?
Pro Bowler?
First-time Pro Bowler?
First-time Pro Bowler for the Titans.
Has to be Byard.
No, because he's been.
I'm going to go.
Byard's not been to the Pro Bowl.
He went last year.
Well, so you're saying, like, because he went, like, on a technicality, right?
Right.
He was an all-pro.
It still counts.
There was a big story last year that he was all-pro and not Pro Bowl.
Right.
I'm going to say Deion Lewis.
Okay. That's Braden?
I guess I need to guess again then.
But I don't know if Lewis went. Did he go last year? He did lead the league in yards per carry.
To be honest with you, I guess this is, I mean, Adoree Jackson and Rashawn Evans both have a chance.
The answer is Adoree Jackson.
Yeah.
Good
do
call.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see him being a Pro Bowler.
How do we evaluate the Pro Bowl, though? Like,
see, I think you're watering it down from the standpoint of people just skip it and then they go to the third or the fourth guy. I mean, the Pro Bowl's a joke, but it's still,
right,
if you do get elected for it, I mean, it does point out the fact that you're a pretty darn good player.
Yeah, but all pro is what matters. Like, all pro means you were, like, who votes on this stuff? Like,
I don't know. If I've got Pro Bowlers on my roster, I feel like I'm going to win some games.
Justin Fowler was a Pro Bowler, right?
From?
What happened to him?
Alabama.
Yeah. They cut him.
I'm just, you know, you get Pro Bowlers get cut. I don't know. Pro Bowl, I think, is overrated.
So you don't like the Pro Bowl, is what you're saying?
I have not watched it in years. I just don't. Yeah, I don't. I think all pro, when Jack Conklin gets all pro as a rookie and when Kevin Byard is all pro as a second year player, like, that is a huge statement in my mind. Whereas Pro Bowl is sort of like, oh, what does it mean? We're not really sure.
Number four.
Interesting story coming out of Murfreesboro. A Tennessee woman was driving. She had a box next to her car she was going to take to the dump. She loaded that in her car, started driving down the road out of a small town called Rockvale. And she looks down while driving and sees a 6-foot snake wrapping around her leg. Apparently it was in the box. Your reaction.
Everybody listening right now is looking down at their legs while they're driving.
Look, I told you guys during the break that if this happened to me, it would not end well because I would freak out.
I would dive out of the car.
I probably would too. Yeah, I would too.
Like, you know how Chris Farley runs out of the car and Tommy Boy?
That doesn't help you with the snake wrapped around your leg.
Bees, they're everywhere.
If it's wrapped around your leg and you jump out of the car, it's still wrapped around your leg, I feel like.
She was able to pull over to the side of the road, remain calm, and got her leg out of the snake.
The only way you get your leg out of the snake is if the car is parked. So you have to resist the urge to lose your mind and then pull the car over, slowly remove your leg from the snake, and then jump out of the car and call the police.
What worries you more, snakes, spiders, or sharks?
Well, I can control sharks. Just never go in the water.
I can step on a spider.
Like, I literally cringe seeing a snake on TV, like, a picture, in person.
I don't like spiders, but, you know, I have to also assume responsibility with, you know, some of my friends that don't like spiders more than I do. And so I have to kind of man up and take care of it. But I'm not a big fan of bugs in general. But, yeah, probably sharks.
Yeah.
But you can control the shark more than anything else. Like, part of this story about this woman's is that, like, the police and the animal control had to put out a message saying, hey, make sure you check all your, you know, if you're pulling a box out of a shed, or if you're in the barn, or if you're out on the field, or if you're whatever, make sure you're checking. Like, you can just happen upon a snake and a spider by accident. You can't really just happen upon a shark. You have to go into the ocean.
Do you remember reading about that story like 20, 25 years ago? A guy was on the toilet and a snake came up through the toilet. Yeah, true story.
Oh my God.
That'll scare you.
Yikes.
I don't know if I can move on after that.
Is it weird to be fascinated by I see a snake and I'm like, stop, and I like want to like check it out.
So you would have a pet snake?
Probably not. But
if you had no kids, would you have a pet snake?
No, probably not. I like...
If you lived in your mom's basement, would you have a pet snake?
As long as Tom Green is hanging out.
There you go.
That's a great
dogs
scene.
Are the greatest pets ever because they just instantaneous loyalty and affection, and they de-stress your life. I just don't know if
because it's your dog.
Yeah, I don't know if a snake de-stresses your life.
Exactly.
But I do find them fascinating. They're fascinating creatures.
Right. Number 5.
PSA time, and I want to see if you guys agree with me. Today is the first day of summer and is also the summer solstice, meaning that it is the point of the year where daylight is longer than night. But people often refer to this as the longest day of the year, which is factually incorrect because all days are 24 hours. So,
all right, Yogi,
help me help you. Do you agree with what I'm saying here?
I don't even know what you said. I'm just going to simplify it for Nick Cale verbiage. That means I have got more daylight to hit golf balls. That's what I'm going
to
do.
Like, you should move to Alaska where it's daylight like 22 hours of the day.
Yeah, I would not be cool with that.
Go move to Alaska. You should play
Chris Mason posted a picture on Twitter last night. He had just gotten to Red Deer in Alberta where he's from. And it was like he posted the picture at like 10 o'clock at night and it was still daylight.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't agree with changing from standard to daylight savings. I think that's idiotic because, like, farms are fine, I guess. But I think when you live in a place where it's either really, really dark 24 hours a day or really, really light for, like, 20 hours a day, I think you just need to move away from that location.
All right. That'll do it for Stick to Sports, brought to you by Decorating Den Interiors. Request a complimentary appointment online today at decoratingden.com. It was a big night for Smashville in the desert. We'll explain coming up next on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.